Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Doctor Is In. I'm Aaron, your usual host, and today we've got a special guest, Michael Figgs. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to have you here. Michael is a fellow friend and colleague of mine, and today's topic is all about death. Is it the end? Why do we feel a sense of pain when we encounter the death of loved ones and so on? In fact, Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then maybe tell us about your encounters about this topic.
Sure. I'm currently studying at Moore College, and before I studied at Moore College, I was a physiotherapist. And as a physiotherapist, a lot of people don't realize, but in the hospitals particularly, you do encounter a lot of death. So I worked in a particular department, the ICU, and it'd almost be every, you get five or so deaths, you know, mm-hmm. in a week. So death was kind of a constant reminder and a reality. But in terms of my personal experiences with death, I remember as a kid, I was really afraid of death. So I remember this particular moment. We were, my family and I, my dad was in the front seat, my mum was there as well. My little brother and I were in the back seat, and we were driving through, through this place. There were fields, and I noticed rose bushes, and next to those rose bushes were plaques. We were driving through a cemetery, and a question dawned on me, and I turned and asked my parents, what happens when we die? And my parents paused a little bit, and eventually my mum replied, "Nothing. You just die." And I remember being quite shaken by that response. I was really sad, really upset. And as a young kid, I wasn't able to sleep a lot of the time because of the reality of death. I didn't understand it at the time, but people have kind of put labels on it. And I think the word that kind of captures this fear of death that I had was the word oblivion, that you cease to exist or exist in a state of nothingness, that all your relationships, everyone that you've ever known, just are gone, and that's it. And it really, really frightened me. I guess I was confronted with the reality of death when my mother had cancer. It was a drawn out battle with cancer. She had breast cancer initially, but the cancer came back again and again, and finally it metastasized in her lungs and her liver. And her final year, it was kind of a drawn out battle where she suffered a lot, and eventually, I wish I could say that she had won that battle, but at the age of 12, I lost my mum to cancer. And death was really personal then, and it's a moment that you'll never forget. I remember my mum saying that you only get one mum, and I lost my mum when I was quite young. So
thanks for sharing, Michael. Kind of imagine what that would have been like. But it also sounds like an experience that many people have experienced, like the pain of losing a loved one, and your childhood experience, the fear of the unknown. I mean, it makes sense that people are afraid of death, aren't they?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I think I remember during my teenage years, I kind of put aside the kind of fear of death a little bit as new experience in life kind of came up. And I think that question and that fear of death, it's pushed aside for a lot of our lives. You know, it's later down the track, maybe someone's listening to this who's a bit older, and you know, it feels like death's impending. But for many of us, maybe who are listening, death seems like a long way away. You know, you look forward to the next best thing. You look forward to finishing uni or, you know, getting your first job, finding a girlfriend, getting engaged, getting married, owning a house, having kids. And so death doesn't feel like a long way away. But when we actually sit down and sit with it, I think, and are confronted with the reality of death, it's very uncomfortable. And there is this fear of death. And so I want to ask the question, but should we be afraid? I mean, let's adopt the naturalist worldview that maybe many of us in this in kind of the Western world adopt. And that is there's nothing after death. We're just a collection of atoms. There's nothing spiritual out there. I wonder how naturalists actually think about death.
And I guess it's something that just occurred to me. This topic is a bit more important now. Like, people are dying from this virus that's out there. People are afraid of death. Well, how do people think about it? Well, Richard Dawkins, and I'm sorry if you're sick of hearing his quotes. He's just so well known. These debates are his bread and butter. He's going to have plenty of quotes out there about these issues. Oh, this is what he says. Although many of us fear death, I think there is something illogical about it. Well, Mike, why do you reckon he says that?
Well, I think it's because simply death is a natural part of life. I know, for example, Stephen Hawking puts it this way. I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. He told The Guardian, for example, that there is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. And so is the idea of heaven or the afterlife just something we've come up to just to deal with the reality that we're in, I guess.
Yeah, is it like a coping mechanism? And I'm reminded of the quote from Karl Marx. He said that religion is the opiate of the people. I guess he's saying there it's a drug that helps us get through the pain of the reality of this life. And you know what? Research psychologists today argue that religion was born from fear of death. And, you know, even in popular culture, there's this really fascinating scene from the movie The Invention of Lying. I think it's on Netflix now if you want to watch it. But I can't really recommend it. Personally, I didn't think it was amazing. But there's a scene in a hospital where the main character's mother is dying. And it seems to capture this point perfectly. She's lying there, she's dying, she's terrified of what is to come. And so her son, who happens to be the only person in the world who is able to lie in this movie, he starts making up stuff and telling her about the amazing place she'll go to after she dies. But while he's telling her these stories, everyone nearby, everyone in the hospital hears him tell this story. They're spellbound and they quickly go and tell their friends, you know, on the phone and their family. And soon enough, a couple of hours later, there's a massive crowd waiting outside the hospital to hear about this wonderful place called heaven. And then the main character explains to them all how they can get there by following rules.
And so it sounds like they're having a go at the idea of heaven and religion. They're mocking it. I remember seeing this movie actually. And so this idea that religion is there to help us to get through the pain of death, but I guess it doesn't really address the issue of how then does the naturalist deal with the problem of death. The naturalist is in theory, of course, someone who's committed to discovering the truth, aren't they? Isn't that part of the reason they're a naturalist? They've rejected the presence of anything that's supernatural because, from their point of view, anything that is supernatural and cannot be tested cannot be real. So naturalists are the people who are seeking truth and reject fanciful lies, as you can put it. Or maybe that's what they're thinking. So that means a consistent naturalist can't keep using religion as a way to deal with death. So what do they do? Is it really despair?
Yeah, well, naturalists like to point out that, you know, we were perfectly content for the many billions of years you and I didn't exist before we were born, and that, you know, you're going to be fine after you die. It's just the same as what it was like before you were born. I guess they're saying we've just got to accept reality and not live the lie that there is an afterlife.
Yeah, yeah. And they'd also say, this is from the British Humanist Association, if life were eternal, wouldn't it lose much of what gives it shape, structure, and meaning? Just like pleasures like reading a book or eating a piece of cake. I guess part of the pleasure is that the book ends and you finish the cake. I mean, if it went on forever, it wouldn't be pleasurable anymore. I get it. It doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. And when I read, looked up what humanists are saying out there, it does sound really reasonable. And in fact, you see the same thing at the end of the popular show on Netflix, The Good Place. If you haven't watched it and you don't want the story spoiled, you can just fast forward for 1 minute. Well, basically, the show is around the premise of people being judged by their actions and giving a score. And if their score is good enough, they get to go to the good place. The thing is, by the end of the show, characters the show is about, well, they do eventually get to the good place. They get there after many trials and issues, which, you know, I'll skip. You can go and watch the show. But the sting at the end is that they realize the good place isn't all that it's cracked up to be. People over there, they're living in stupor. Like, there's no end and no meaning. They're just getting more stupid and wasting their lives. And so someone comes up with the idea that, to fix this, that all people who are in the good place should be given the right to leave, the right to end it all once they've done everything they want to do. And it works. It does fix the good place. People are genuinely happy in the good place. But eventually some of the main characters decide they've also had enough and they end their existence by leaving the good place. And so the show realizes that eternal life is lame anyway. And, you know, that kind of fits in with the naturalist argument, doesn't it? The naturalist sensibly argues that the presence of death gives our lives now more meaning.
But that's just a TV show. I mean, surely you can't base truth on what's a TV show saying, right?
Yeah, and that's true. But I think the show does, maybe by accident, hit on something that is true. And interestingly, you know what? The Buddhist perspective is similar. Because in the Buddhist perspective, eternal life is a curse. The whole point of life for a Buddhist is to escape all the suffering. To escape and reach nirvana. That is, the end of life. You know, to escape the cycle of reincarnation. That's the way you escape all this suffering. And you know what? It's true also from a Christian perspective, as shocking as it may seem.
Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, I think the Christian would agree with that point of view if you hold the assumption that living forever would be without the presence of God. You know, like if living forever was just a better version of living here on earth. And I think the Christian would say the atheist is right to think that a life without death would be terrible. And because the atheist has that same assumption, right? There's no God in the picture. And it kind of goes back to that previous podcast episode. If you haven't had a listen, please do. The previous episode was all about meaning and purpose in life. And if you're a naturalist, there is ultimately no meaning and purpose. And therefore, eternal life would be horrendous in the end.
So maybe there are implications there for Christian evangelism?
Yeah, I think as Christians, the selling point that we want to tell people is not simply you just get to live forever. Because as we've sort of seen, if without God in the picture, that's terrible. It's more along the lines of you'll get to live forever with God. And we picked this up in the Westminster Shorter Catechism. That's one of the important statements of the faith that's out there. And the Catechism says, in response to the question, what is the chief end of man? Well, the answer is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And, you know, if you're not a Christian, that doesn't sound that great. But it is great because, and let me use the words of William Lane Craig here, God is the locus and source of infinite goodness and love, the paradigm of moral value. To know Him is an incommensurable good, the fulfillment of human existence. Only God can forever satisfy our deepest longings. And so I think Christians, we want to say living forever with God is good, not just living forever.
Nice. Well, let's recap a bit then. So what is the naturalist position? The presence of death gives our lives real meaning, purpose, and pleasure because we know that we need to make the most of our time here on earth. We need to face up to the reality that there is no afterlife and death is just a natural process. Doesn't that sound reasonable given the atheist worldview? Surely it makes sense.
Yeah, it does sound pretty good, but let's slow down and look a bit at these statements. Now, firstly, does the presence of death give our lives real meaning? Well, I get where the atheist is coming from, and I think the argument goes like this. Knowing that life isn't a dress rehearsal of the life to come makes it far more real and meaningful. You know, your best life now. And funnily enough, there are some dodgy prosperity gospel preachers out there who seem to say the same thing. But the meaning that we're talking about, you know, if there's no God in the picture, well, it must be self-generated. We make our own meaning. And committed atheists like Dawkins himself admit there isn't purpose or meaning. And feel free to, again, to listen to the previous podcast if you haven't already. But I'll repeat this quote from Dawkins. In a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. And you won't find any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at the bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil and good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. And he's not the only one. There's Alam Shah, the author of the Young Atheist Handbook. This is what he says. Well, yes, of course I know that life is ultimately without meaning or purpose, but the trick is to not wake up every morning and feel that way. Cognitive dissonance, embrace it. Create a sense of meaning and purpose by doing something useful with your life.
So the meaning that the naturalist claims for their life, the meaning that is there because our lives are limited, is well just made up. To say that death gives our lives real meaning doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and you can also turn the argument the other way. The fact that our lives end and that's it, in the eyes of the naturalist, means they have no meaning because it makes no difference if our lives existed or not. Yes, our lives may have influenced others and changed the world, but because the world will die one day, and in fact, the universe too, you think about the evidence regarding the ever-accelerating expansion of the universe leading to its cold death in the future. Because the world and the universe will die, then all those things lack ultimate meaning as well. I'll let that sink in for a moment. Let me quote William Lane Craig at this point. Suppose the Big Bang had never occurred. Suppose the universe had never existed. What ultimate difference would it make? The universe is doomed to die anyway. In the end, it makes no difference whether the universe ever existed or not. Therefore, it is without ultimate significance. And the same is true of the human race. Mankind is a doomed race in a dying universe. Because the human race will eventually cease to exist, it makes no ultimate difference whether it did exist. Mankind is thus no more significant than a swarm of mosquitoes or a barnyard of pigs. For their end is all the same blind cosmic process that coughed them up in the first place will eventually swallow them all again.
Yeah, and before you think that this is just a Christian spin on this argument, let me point out that the Nobel Prize winner for literature, Albert Camus, thought the same way. He said that there is only one really serious philosophical question, and that is suicide. Suicide was the only way out of this predicament. Incredibly depressing stuff, don't you think? Mm-hmm. But that's why I think it's wrong to say that death gives our lives meaning and purpose. Now let's look at the second part of the atheist position that we talked about, and that is that death is just a natural process. We need to deal with the reality and that death gives us real meaning in our lives. Are believers in the afterlife simply people who have concocted their belief as something to help them deal with the pain of death? Isn't there zero scientific evidence for someone being alive after dying? You're the scientist. You're the scientist, so aren't you?
Well, I have to confess, I don't know, and it's not something that I've looked into much, as in the scientific evidence for people remaining alive after they're physically dying. Because, you know, as a Christian, my belief in something being after death, it's not from scientific evidence, it's from historical figure of Jesus. It's from the historical figure of Jesus and the historical evidence for his resurrection. It's actually not a matter of science we're dealing with here. And as a trained scientist, I know that science involves repeatable observations and the testing of hypotheses. But whether Jesus rose from the dead or not, it's not a question of science. It's a question of history. You can't repeat it in a lab. You know, it's like if I asked Michael, what did you eat for breakfast last Monday? Like, there isn't an experiment that I can do, you know, repeatable experiment that I can do to figure that out. But I can use the clues of history, the evidence left behind, the people who saw it happen. Maybe I'd ask Michael's wife. Those things help us figure out whether you ate cereal for breakfast last Monday. And in the same way, we use the tools of history to work out whether Jesus rose from the dead.
Yeah, I'd want to add that any Christian should be willing to concede that normally it's impossible for someone to come back after they've died. And so Jesus coming back from the dead was a special event. We don't expect it to happen for other people right now. That's what makes it such big news.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. Unfortunately, we don't have time here to discuss the historical evidence behind the resurrection, if that's a real sticking point for you out there. There's lots of really good books that deal with that question. If you want something that's really short, concise, easy to read, and helpful, I found this crew to be for the book More Than a Carpenter by Josh McDowell. So yeah, I'd recommend you start there if you're interested. Okay, so the atheists claim that those who believe in the afterlife are denying reality. Well, it's of course dependent on, is there an afterlife? But Christians in particular believe that Jesus came back from the dead and that there is plenty of historical evidence for that. And so before you make that claim that, you know, there can't be an afterlife, well, you'd have to deal with those Christian arguments for the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And that's something that I'd encourage you to do. Michael and I both certainly believe it.
Finally, there's this atheist claim that death is just a natural process and therefore it's irrational to be afraid of it. I remember that Dawkins quote you mentioned earlier. Many of us are afraid of death, but there's something illogical about it. And related to this is the sentiment that just because you want something to be true doesn't make it true. Fair enough. But why is it that death, even of people we don't know well, why does it seem sad? Why does it come with a sense of loss? If death is natural and normal, why does it hurt so much? And more importantly, what comfort can the atheist give to someone who's grieving without being intellectually dishonest?
Yeah, I guess you think about the scenario. What if you were at a funeral? And you're a secular humanist, you're an atheist. How would it go down to say to the grieving family who lost their young son tragically in an accident, how would it go down to say, you know, you shouldn't feel grief. Don't be irrational. Death is just a normal part of life. You should just celebrate the life he was able to live. I suspect that's just not comfort at all. Remember, let me remind you of that Dawkins quote here. You won't find any rhyme or reason in it. He's talking about the universe, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at the bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Naturalism doesn't bring comfort to the family of the person who dies young at all. It can't. And at this point, the naturalist is happy to say, well, at least it's the truth. But it doesn't explain why. Why is it painful? Why is it so normal and so ubiquitous for it to be painful or scary? Thinking back to Mike's story as a kid, why is it painful if it's just a normal part of life? Maybe some would say, you know, it's just nature's way of stopping us taking life lightly. But it still hurts when the loved one who's lived a long time, lived a full and happy life, it's still sad and it still hurts when they die. But isn't that a perfectly normal part of life, as opposed to the life tragically cut short?
So if the naturalist worldview around death doesn't really work, that is, there isn't real meaning because there's death, there isn't any comfort, it doesn't explain the pain of losing loved ones, and it assumes it is true there's nothing after death, despite, the evidence of the resurrected Jesus, how does, say, Christianity explain these things?
Yeah, Christians base their hope of life after death around the person of Jesus. He's someone who died and came back. And so if you could show that historically, that the resurrection didn't happen, that there was no good evidence for it, you know, I would give it all up. I would stop being a Christian. I'd stop being a follower of Jesus. It's because of this hope of life after death that our lives have real significance, ultimate significance, unlike in the naturalist worldview. And so that means Christianity can offer real comfort to those who are grieving the loss of a loved one who followed Jesus, because they really do still exist. And finally, Christianity explains perfectly adequately the pain that we experience when we lose a loved one. You see, humans were created to live forever, according to the biblical account. It's only after humanity fell, after Adam and Eve rejected God, that physical death entered the world. And so, contrary to the naturalist claims, death isn't normal or natural. Let me read to you the way that Tim Keller puts it in his book on death. Death is not the way it ought to be. Death is abnormal. It is not a friend. It isn't right. This isn't truly part of the circle of life. Death is the end of it. So grieve, cry. The Bible tells us not only to weep, but to weep with those who are weeping. We have a lot of crying to do. And so, after talking about all these things, Michael, do you mind sharing how has this Christian understanding of death made sense of life for you?
I remember when I was in the ICU, I treated a patient who was for palliation. So they were confronted with their own death. And I remember her just being in a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and she was saying, I want to die. I want to go home, she said. I want to go home to my Lord. And I asked her, is Jesus your Lord? And then she said something about, I'm not that religious. It was a really sad moment, but I think it made me realize that death is just so abnormal, that it's so wrong, and growing up, for me to be confronted with the reality of death, without any hope, but as a Christian, as someone who knows Jesus and knows the hope of the resurrection, one thing that I didn't share at the beginning of my story about my mum was that she became a Christian a bit over a year before she passed away. She became a Christian, and she faced death and the reality of her own death in a fresh way, in a unique way. And I didn't really understand that at the time. I wasn't a Christian at the time, but she knew that there was more to this life, more to her death. She believed that Jesus died and rose again. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die." And so I know, because of what Jesus has done, that Jesus died and rose again, I believe that I'll see my mum again. I believe that Jesus has made that promise because he has died, he has risen, and there's an incredible hope beyond the grave.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Michael. And so, to the listener out there, thanks for listening. But my question to you is this: which worldview is more compelling and attractive? Is it the naturalist one or is it the Christian one? Which one makes the most sense in this world? Surely it's the Christian one, and surely it's worth investigating more to figure out if these claims of Jesus are true. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and thank you so much, Michael, for appearing on this show. We'll see you all next time.